Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Open Minds Radio with your host Alejandro Rojas.
Hello and welcome to Open Minds Radio. This is your host, Alejandro Rojas. And guess what? We have a special guest. I get so excited. I always have some coffee, and that's probably why I get a little too excited. When the show starts, I get so happy, especially when I have a happy face sitting next to me like this one here.
Yeah.
Mauricio Bayard. Yeah. I've talked about him a lot, and he'll be our guest. Of course, we're going to do some news, and this is kind of cool, too. We're going to talk to Jeff Beckman, because if you haven't seen, all over the news, New York Times, LA Times is talking about the Denver Ballot Initiative, which we've covered many times on this show, and it is going to go to the voters. So the voters in Denver in August are going to be able to vote to create an extraterrestrial committee, and we're going to talk to Jeff about that in just a minute. In between shows, he's on MSNBC earlier. He's going to be on CNN in the morning. But after that and during, you've got the pleasure of being on Open Minds Radio with Mauricio Bayard. I've talked about him a lot because I've loved his name, and he probably doesn't know this, that it started when, you know, I started working with Paola Harris years ago. And she always talked about her editor, Mauricio Bayard.
Mm-hmm.
So I think probably the very first show I ever did, I was talking about Mauricio Bayard because I love the show. So these guys have heard the name over and over again, and who would know that I'd be sitting in the cubicle next to him and working with him?
Well, I never imagined that before, but now this is a reality.
So we'll talk about Mauricio. He's got an incredible history. He did his magazine out there in Italy on UFOs. He actually, you might not know this, worked for Rolling Stone as an editor-in-chief out in Italy. So he's hung out with all the rock stars. And he's got an incredible history regarding ufology, including work with people like Michael Wolff and Colonel Corso. And he's brought just about every ufologist out to Italy. He's even done translation for them from English to Italian at many events. So we'll get into that. However, first up, as usual, is the news. And the first news item actually we'll go over is Robbie Williams. We've talked about him before, and I've told you one of the funny things, my favorite Robbie Williams story was the first time I ever think I heard his name. And that was at the UFO Congress, and he showed up there. And the English guys are running around, oh, my gosh, Robbie Williams. And I asked one of them, Ross Hemsworth, great guy, I asked him, who's Robbie Williams? You don't know who Robbie Williams is, only the most popular pop star. And I still was like, okay. But anyways, I guess this guy's famous in Europe. He's a pop star. He's part of a group that's kind of like the New Kids on the Block type of thing. And he showed up at the UFO Congress. He's been way into UFOs. And he hit the news this week because he's looking for a new place in the middle of nowhere, possibly Australia, where he can watch for UFOs. He wants to find a place that's a hot spot that he can look at UFOs all night long. He's also looking in New Zealand, but this whole hunt has made a lot of headlines out there in Britain papers, and I think even in some American papers. So that's some of the news going on here, and I'm going to look at. Remember, also remind you guys, if you go to openminds.tv, that's our website, you're going to be able to go to the radio tab, and you can watch us live. And, you know, Mauricio is very popular with the women. So if you come and look on, you're going to find out why, you know. So, and I'm sure there's a lot of Italian women who he left heartbroken back in Italy that are going to be happy to be watching him live here today. So let's see. Some other news. Bulgaria. There's a Bulgarian Academy of Science, and the space research section of this academy is saying that they are, not only are UFOs here, but they're contacting them, and they're conversing with these aliens through pictographs in England, namely crop circles. So these crop circles are sending messages back and forth. The main scientist is Luchazov Flipov, and I'm sure I'm saying that wrong, but he actually, at first, you know, we saw that story come across and we're thinking, yeah, you know, is that rumors? Is that true? Is that substantiated? But later on, there was an article that they interviewed this main scientist, and he said, yeah, that's true. You know, we're talking to these aliens and stuff. You guys are behind the times. And I don't know about these SETI people because, you know, they're over here looking for radio signals when we're talking to them using crop circles right now. So very interesting story. Great story out of Bulgaria, and hopefully you'll see more on that because, of course, if this is true, it's incredible. So we'll try to follow up why they think that they are talking to aliens out there. Also, and I went out of order, and I apologize to my guys back there in the clicker room, that's what I'll call it, where they put up the pictures for the live streaming, because I skipped Gary McKinnon, who yet again is in the news. I mean, this guy is, talk about a roller coaster, and this week was a roller coaster with this guy. It started off with news that the psychiatrist had said, if you send him to America, he will definitely or most likely commit suicide. So, you know, people are thinking, oh, they're not going to send him. Well, right on the tail of that is the news that the parliament says, tough cookies, we're sending you away. Have fun with him in the U.S. And then news comes out that another group, and I'm not even sure who this is, but another group of judges is going to review his case, and that's as of, like, yesterday. So yet again, this Gary McKinnon case is a total roller coaster. And in Britain, you know, it's bigger news than it is here. But what's interesting is that it is big news in Britain. And, you know, here in America, if you talk about UFOs and you're really into that, they kind of look down on you, and we'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. But in Britain, they're really UFO crazy. They have UFO stories, like, all over the place. In fact, all of this news that I'm referring to, of course, you can read about on the front page of openminds.tv in our UFO headlines section, and that's updated on a daily basis. If you want to keep up to date, you've got to come to the website every day. Then you will know it all, like me and Mauricio here. But a lot of those stories that you're going to see there about sightings are from British papers. They're all over the place. Other scientific news, actually, is some of the astronomers are talking about how they found a new way to look at what they're calling exomoons, sort of like exopolitics, which is what Mauricio is into. But these exomoons, they're kind of, they even have a picture, and I think we have it here too, of Star Wars, the forest moon of Endor, and they're pretty much saying, hey, you know, if we're going to look for life elsewhere or life-bearing bodies elsewhere, then maybe we shouldn't just look at planets, but moons are another possibility. So now they've created some programs to be able to look at moons as well as planets. And if you're watching the Ustream, they have some cool graphics that they added to this thing. It is looking better than ever. Look at how cool that is.
Mm-hmm.
That's like better than any TV show you're going to get out there, people.
I'm not commenting because right now I'm less interested. Before, the topics that you were touching, such as the news.
Okay, give me a minute. Good. I got more news.
I know.
But that was interesting, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
School. There's a school out here in Arizona that just fired their IT director.
Oh,
and that's because he put on all of their computers at the school the SETI at home, which is silly because essentially what SETI at home is the search for extraterrestrial intelligence. That sounds good, but these guys are kind of goofy. They're looking for the radio signals like on the movie Contact. And they have a program you can install on your computer where they'll send you some info. This program kind of compiles that info and sends it back. And that way you're helping them compile and helping them with computer analysis. Well, this guy installed this in all of the computers in the high school, and he got fired for it. And actually, in the latest story, because this has created somewhat of a buzz out there, they've said that they fired him not just for that, but for incompetence as well. So kind of an interesting extraterrestrial-related story. The big story of the week, however, of course, is Jeff Peckman and his initiative. And we're going to get him on the phone in just a minute. But essentially, this is going to allow the Denver voters to be able to vote on an extraterrestrial commission and then essentially have a committee that is not funded by taxpayers. It's funded by grants and donations. And this committee is going to look into UFOs, and they're going to share their findings with the Denver citizens, so Denver citizens will be ready should aliens arrive, or maybe they're going to be the first group to communicate with them. Maybe they're going to be, you know, if they voted in, they're going to land on the Capitol there in Denver and say, hey, guys, you know, you're the first political committee group here in the States.
We can ask Jeff.
Yeah, we'll ask Jeff about that. And then finally, the last story, and we're hoping to get some more information on this. I have emailed Nick Pope, someone who Mauricio particularly is fond of, a great researcher out of Britain. He actually worked for the Ministry of Defense as a researcher. And interesting enough, you know, Maureen, this great, you know, person we have here working on some of our online marketing, she found this story where just as of yesterday, if you go to the MOD's homepage and you look for the UFO hotline, they say, sorry, as of December 1st, we're shutting it down. We're not taking any more phone calls. We're not taking any more emails about UFOs. We've decided they're not a threat to national security, so we don't need to be concerned about it. So if you see a UFO flying around a commercial airline, they don't want to hear about it. So you're going to have to go to us. I mean, we're the best source that can report that to openminds.tv. And we have gotten a few interesting reports that, you know, at some point we'll share with you. I should probably be doing that. Man, I am falling behind. But let's call up Mr. Peckman. Maricio is real excited about this part. All right. I am Mr. Peckman. My dialing song.
Mm-hmm.
As Mauricio knows, I come up with a lot of great songs. He's particularly fond of my music.
Hi, this is Jeff.
Hey, Jeff, it's Alejandro and Mauricio here.
Man, buongiorno.
Hey, buongiorno. Well, let's say buon pomeriggio. Good afternoon here.
Yeah, you'll have to translate that first.
Well, I said it. Okay. Buongiorno means good morning.
Okay.
Okay.
But I want to say, first of all, congratulations. I am so, so happy to hear that you were able to get the signatures and you were able to get on the ballot, because I know that the hard work that you and lots of our friends in Denver have put forth to make this happen. And, you know, I'd love to hear, we had you on the show before, I'd love to hear why you do it and everything. But congratulations for getting that done, because I think that's going to be a big deal for 2010 and UFOs.
Yes, I agree, and thank you very much for your support and for helping collect some of those signatures and being with us at the booth and just, you know, talking up the issue with people passing by and and listening to their stories, because as you know, there were a lot of people just mm-hmm. on the street that would show up and share something that they hadn't shared with anybody else. So I think we'll see more of that.
Yeah. So you're a busy man, because as you predicted, this is becoming a big media event.
Yes, you know, and I knew that there would be some media coverage early on, just because they've been waiting to find out if we would make the ballot. And I thought that it would start lightening up a little bit, but there continues to be some, now the national radio and TV shows are asking for interviews, so we'll just have to let that play out a little bit. I do believe it will be more of a sustained, in-depth coverage over the months leading up to the election versus just a flash flood.
Mm-hmm. One cool thing, because you had let me know about the as well, that you were in the LA Times. They did a story on the initiative, and they put up a poll. And the poll says, do you think you know they should do something like this in your city? The choices are no, yes, or yes, but only if it creates a similar commission to investigate Bigfoot. Which, hey, why not? You know, we got them out in Colorado. But anyways, it's overwhelmingly yes here. I mean, there's not very many votes, only 100, but 70% is yes. And better yet, you were on the New York Times. They also put up a poll that whether you believe in extraterrestrials or not, and 86% of the people have said yes.
Okay, now that I think that was the New York Daily News.
Oh, you're right, New York Daily News. You're right, you're
okay.
Right.
Okay, yeah, I just looked at that one again. Yeah, we're way up there on that one, too.
So I think this shows kind of what you spoke to earlier when you got a little bit of criticism from the city of Denver, that this subject actually is. I mean, you got 10,000 signatures, actually. This is a big deal for people.
That's right, and people were more than happy to sign it. You know, some would just yank the petition out of our hands because they've been waiting. They know they've been deceived and lied to for their entire lifetime about this, and they see this as an opportunity for we the people to take on the task of disclosing what we know. And what we know is actually quite a lot. You know, there's evidence in the private sector, just amongst common citizens, that's very impressive. Stan Romanek is one case, but there are plenty of others.
Yep, I agree. I know Maurizio had a
question. Oh, yeah, I do have a question, but let's say, first of all, that my impression is that this is something that never happened before in the entire world. In other words, I don't recall any type of initiative such as this one in Europe. And this is major, and it's an example that has to be followed by our fellow friends in Europe.
Yes, they can do this. I mean, this whole process of initiatives actually started in Switzerland in the 1400s. So, you know, it's possible in other places, but our fourth president, James Madison, once said that the people are the only legitimate fountain of power, at least in this country, and from that power, all the other powers of government are derived. So I think that's been one of the missing elements, that there hasn't been a way to tap into that fountain of power directly, taking this issue to the people and engaging them when they know they're going to have to vote on something. They really do pay attention and go very deeply into the issue. And I think it's going to be fantastic because it will legitimize the discussion in every school, in every business, in every civic organization or neighborhood organization. And I have been giving talks about extraterrestrial civilizations to civic groups. And I've talked to the Kiwanis, Optimist Club, the Rotary Club, and they're all very open to this discussion.
Well, I wonder if this will also affect the ufology in general. In other words, if the researchers here in the United States will be considering that this is a political issue and not only a question of nuts and bolts to understand if the UFOs are for real. I mean, this is a question that it's already totally obsolete for me. So you're in the right track.
Yes, and I think the people that have done the great research, MUFON, other independent researchers, will be seen as, you know, on the front line as a great resource now for the information to get to the public. They're certainly, they've collected a lot. That's their expertise. I think now they'll get the rewards of many years of hard labor and focused attention on this issue, and it will help this campaign, and it will help the public to learn more about this.
Yeah. Well, I know you're a busy guy. You were just on MSNBC, which we should be seeing on their site very soon, right?
It's actually already posted.
Okay, great. And then you're just about to talk to CNN because you're going to be on there in the morning.
That's right. So this will be a pre-interview in just a few minutes.
All right, great. Is there any other big media things coming up?
There's a couple more sitting in front of me on my my email list to respond to. There's a large radio program in New York. We're trying to coordinate something, and one out of Atlanta, another national CNN radio program, and we're just still trying to connect. And actually, in Denver, where you lived in this area recently, there's the number one. I think they have the number one country station in the country. They won a country music award again, and I'll be on there next week sometime in the morning.
Perfect, and hopefully we'll see you on Larry King again soon.
Yeah, maybe we can all go on and just have a big celebration when this all gets busted wide open.
Yep, that'd be great. Well, thank you for taking the time and joining us. Job well done. I think what you've done is phenomenal, and it's going to be even for those naysayers in the UFO research community, because unfortunately there are some. I think even them they're going to benefit from your efforts. So, job well done, and thank you so much for everything you've done here.
Thank you both so much, Alejandro and Maurizio.
Okay,
look forward
thanks.
To seeing you again someday.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Take care.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
All right. That is cool. So, he's done some awesome
stuff.
He
was good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I remember when we met last time was in Laughlin, Nevada, for the last Congress. And afterwards, with Paula Harris and a bunch of other friends, we went down close to the Area 51 Ghost Gate. And the night before that adventure, we had the pleasure to stay all together in this place in Alamo. That's the name of the place.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing to do with the famous battle.
Actually. In the middle of nowhere
in
New Mexico.
Middle, yeah, exactly. And we had a chat, and it was very, very interesting. This guy is eloquent, is intelligent, is sharp, and he goes to the point. We need people who are representing the people in order to break through the wall of silence, what I call like that. I mean, it's a long time, too long, you know. So this type of initiative is excellent.
One of the things I love about Jeff, too, is he's real mellow. He's always very positive. I know he meditates a lot, which I think is something everybody should do. It's an important thing to keep a level head. And for instance, one of the city council members in Denver criticized him and said, you know, maybe we made it too easy for these guys to get signatures. But he had to get 4,000 certified signatures. And what happens is he actually had to get 10,000. Most of them were rejected because they actually didn't live in the right area or they couldn't read their spelling, you know, something simple like that. So he had to go back and collect more to get this to happen. And his response to the city councilman was, well, you only had to get 100 signatures to get yourself on to be considered for the city council. And now you're making $70,000 and you weren't even contested in your race. So it's much easier to get into your job than it is to...
Yeah, and this is direct politics. In other words, is the participation of normal people to the everyday life in politics. And that reminds me also to recall in my mind, I remembered another initiative. That was the Roswell initiative. You remember that?
No, uh-huh.
That was something like 10 years ago, maybe a little more, on the wave after the autopsy footage that Santilli brought out on light, and they became very famous all over. What happened was that people were asking answers, posing questions to the government of the United States in order to understand what really happened in Roswell, and it was a proposal to... the gathering of a certain number of letters. That was called Roswell Initiative, and I believe that actually these letters, by hundreds, thousands, probably close to 100,000, got lost somewhere.
Lost?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
That was news about a month ago or 2 months ago. I have to go back to that subject because it was so painful after all the efforts we posed in the past in order to understand what really happened in Roswell, not having the any type of clue, any type of solution.
Mm-hmm.
Can I say something to my friends in Italy?
Definitely.
Okay. Ciao a tutti, ragazzi. Come state? Questa è la radio di Open Minds. Sono Maurizio Baiata. Vi voglio bene. Saluto tutti i miei ascoltatori in Italia e anche chiaramente gli amici di UFO Forum. That's it. I just say everybody hello in Italian.
Okay.
Because I know that they're listening to this program. Yeah.
Good. There were no bad words there, were there?
Oh, no, not at all. Not even to many people that I'm supposed to spend bad words for them, but I will avoid that. I'd be good. Here in America, I'm becoming a good citizen, respectful for everything.
Well, since this is kind of a free call, did you want to say anything to the women that you left back?
No, not at all. Not
or sad?
No, that's too sad. Yeah, that's too sad. It's a sad angle on my life.
Yeah, those poor things. Mm-hmm. But, well, let's start off with the beginning. So let's go way back, and I know you were saying we could go as far back as your past life,
my
but we don't need to go that far.
No.
Let's go back to when did you first get really interested in this subject?
That was when I was around 12 or 13, and I started reading books by people such as Peter Colosimo in Italy. He was an Italian researcher and journalist, and von Däniken. Basically, the other book that really gave me a hint of differentiating opened my interest towards other boundaries was the Book of Magicians by Paulson Berger, because they're questioning the realities, our realities as we do know what's going on in front of us, in front of our eyes every day. It is totally different. They were just giving me a lesson, and I believe that that was the beginning of my interest in terms of journalism also. Mm-hmm. Because it's a question about you pose the questions and then you transfer the answers to the readers.
Mm-hmm. And then you went on to become a journalist.
I did, because I was very lucky. And that was 1969. Somebody proposed me to write a column on motorcycles for a weekly rock magazine called Child 2001.
Mm-hmm.
That was September 1969. I used to go already to clubs and see the bands were coming from England and some of them also from the United States, basically British bands playing in Italy. And I was so interested in that I found myself in the middle of the first editorial department. And that guy, the editor-in-chief, told me one day, "You're not good in writing only about sports or motorcycles, but also in rock music. Can you give him an example? Can you write something?" I wrote my first article was on Black Sabbath.
Wow.
Yeah. And I loved that music, and that was the beginning of the beginning. In those years, I tried, in any case, to talk about music that I really loved,
mm-hmm.
not something that I was commissioned to write for.
Mm-hmm. And this is Rome?
This is Rome.
Yeah, so you had all of the best probably coming out there.
They were coming like hordes of bands, mm-hmm. because we found in Italy that we were definitely very open to the so-called romantic rock or mm-hmm. progressive rock from England and the psychedelic rock from the United States mm-hmm. in the same time, okay? And these were also, let's say, the London and Los Angeles and New York and San Francisco were representing to us the way to express something that was freedom, that was an expression of new reality and new consciousness and the possibility that you can make a difference. So it was a political message that we mm-hmm. were receiving. Therefore, their music was the vector for the message.
Mm.
And I started not only writing, but actually also having lots of interviews with these guys,
mm-hmm.
all of them. I mean, the ones that were passing through Italy had to...
That's great. I mean, that's a dream job that you had.
It was fantastic, also a little physically demanding, because mm-hmm. in those years, no sleep at all.
Yeah.
At night, you know, because it's impossible. You go to a gig, you see them playing, and then at night, you're supposed to write the article in a weekly magazine, The Rhythm of Production.
Probably after a little bit of partying, huh?
Oh, well, if you were invited by them on backstage, that was already wild. Well, now, then what I can tell you about music is that I like very much the so-called cosmic music and mm-hmm. electronic music coming from Germany.
Mm.
So I met guys such as Ashra Temple, Klaus Schulz, Tangerine Dream, many other bands that were opening the... they were exploring other territories in music, in sounds, and creating different levels of perception. And that really was something, because I found myself in the interest of a flying disc with a connection between the flying discs saga that I was living inside me, also with their music.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, I found them connected to the cosmic music came from Germany. They were called Cosmician Couriers. And one of the journalists that was seminal for me was Ralf Ulrich Kaiser.
Mm-hmm.
That was his name. I believe he's still alive, thank God. And the other one was a French guy named Paul Alessandrini. And he was the editor-in-chief of Rock and Folk, the best French magazine. And we had a chance to go together from Milano to Hamburg, then Düsseldorf, and we saw a concert by Ashra Temple and Klaus Schulz that is still in my mind as one of the best ever. Nevertheless, the best ever concert that I've seen was the Who playing at the Royal Albert Hall in London. I believe that was 1973 or 74, and they mm-hmm. played Quadrophenia.
That was the year I was born.
Yeah.
There he is. They're showing the picture of Keith Moon there.
Keith Moon was with John Bonham of Led Zeppelin, absolutely the best drummers ever.
Mm-hmm.
And they were creating the music that is still there.
I've been listening to Zeppelin in my car mm-hmm. a lot. So
yeah.
That's, you know, an incredible, the only thing that could have been better, because it's a dream job. Now you have a little bit more of a dream realized, being able to work with me, but I wasn't alive back then.
It's an everyday lesson working with you, man, absolutely. And with my other colleagues, they're all very, very well prepared in this business. I mean, knowing what is a UFO is one thing. Now, knowing how to deal and communicate about the UFO phenomenon and the alien presence on Earth to the large public is totally different.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a question of great sensitivity. First of all, you need to have that. And our boss is a person that has that touch.
So moving into just that, you were a rock writer for a long time, even worked for Rolling Stone, which is the biggest, and then you got into UFOs and UFO journal. How did that happen?
That happened because when I moved to United States...
After a wild party, you woke up?
No. Well, wild parties in New York were just common ground for us as correspondents for rock magazines. But what happened was that I was growing my personal interest in the so-called investigative journalism, mm-hmm. which is totally different than the standard journalism. I cannot go in depth in terms of what's the real definition for good journalists, but I respect the five letters word, why, where, when, who, and what. Mm-hmm. Basically, if you don't respond to these questions, an article is already lousy. And this is the basic. Then, when you have to go in depth and in interviewing people, and then you have to understand what is in their mind when you are talking to these guys, for instance, let's say a David Bowie or a Ringo Starr or Kit Richards. I mean, you're supposed to be little, very little personality opposed to somebody that is already famous all over the world. Okay, when you're talking about UFOs and when you're talking about alien experiences to real experiences, that's more important than interviewing Ringo Starr for me, because that was the point when I understood that their experience was definitely real. So you cannot lie to me, because I was already quite experienced, as Jimmy said. You know, are you experienced? Well, I know the if a person is sincere or not. I can tell you that. Therefore, I learned that the question of contacts and abductions was definitely very important for me already in the early 80s.
So what was your first venture into UFO journalism? What was the first maybe magazine or paper or whatever?
The newspaper I was working for was called Il Progresso Italoamericano, the Italo-American Progress, and it was a newspaper that was founded in the United States in the other century, in the beginning of the 900, and the editor-in-chief, every time a news was coming from the wire, actually we didn't have any internet then, so we were receiving wire cables through agencies.
And you were in New York at this time?
I was in New York.
Okay.
Yeah. But the main office is, and still is in New Jersey. He was going, Maurizio, come over, come here. See, this is news that are pertaining to you, because they're talking about UFOs. And therefore, I had to cover all the time UFOs and mysteries and stuff, because, you know, life is it's mysterious in many senses every day. So that side of the news, I had to cover it. And one day after the other, I built up a certain experience again. And then what really happened was when I came back to Italy, I started working for as a documentary producer by myself. And I was introduced in the world, the gigantic world of the so-called trade market. Home video and documentaries.
Oh, I see.
And it happened to me like to be, it was a real revelation for me. One afternoon, I was there in Cannes, at the MIPCOM in Cannes, and I believe it was 89, and I saw a flyer depicting an alien face. In front of this flyer, you had an alien face, a face of a gray being.
Wow.
Yeah, and I said, what is this? I picked up the flyer, and it was a documentary. So I did my best in order to achieve, purchase the rights for that documentary, and I started working with the Italian TV station Rai 2, Rai 2, for Giovanni Minoli, one of the best ever journalists in Italy. And he liked me in a way, and he said, Maurizio, go for it and try to find for me other information. And I started searching and searching, and I came on the Roswell subject. And in 1991, I believe, we had the first major broadcast of a documentary in Italy, prime time, regarding what? Roswell. They never heard anything but, you know, flying large objects in the sky.
So they didn't know about Roswell until 91?
No, nothing at all, nothing at all.
So did they not know about Stanton Friedman?
They didn't. Not Stanton, not Jesse Marcel, not anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it was a great revelation, because I remember that we hit 5 million people that night. For an Italian documentary, was major, definitely. So for about 4 or 5 years, I stayed there in the documentary field, and then all of a sudden, being so connected to documentaries, just like out of the blue, the Fantilli stuff came, and I had to. It happened to me that I got stuck in that situation for an year or so, and it was Very, very.
So, and that's why you were in the documentary field.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I want to get into the Santilli stuff, but I have a couple of questions first, because I know, you know, if you all haven't seen, Maurizio wrote a recent story. He's been writing some stories on our website about his experience with Santilli. And, of course, this is the alien autopsy footage, which is very controversial, and there's a lot of debate and commenting going on our website about it. And I know Maurizio wants to talk about some of the questions people have there. And he's also been involved with a lot of other incredible cases I want to get to. Mm-hmm. But I want to ask, so you seemed then, it wasn't just work for you, though, it seems.
Oh,
this
no.
This UFO stuff was a passion.
No, because that's the other side, which mm-hmm. is the personal side.
Mm-hmm.
I had my first sighting in 1985 in Coba, which is a very little tiny town. Now it's grown up. But in that time, at that time, when you were leaving the island of Cozumel, as we did, we were the three of us, three friends, coming from New York and having a week of vacation in the Yucatan Peninsula in Mexico, and you leave Cancun. From Cancun, you go down south to Tulum, which is absolutely stunning. And then I knew that there was a little town called Coba, totally not even signed in the, you don't even find the name in the maps
wow.
of Coba at that time. Now you do. So
wow.
we went down to Coba, and that night, after a very frugal meal, we went under this guy, Francisco, who was the owner of the posada where we were having dinner. He told us, you want to see strange things in the sky? You go close to the lagoon. Now, the lagoon of Coba is full of alligators, actually, so we were pretty cautious, and we stopped in a certain place, and we started watching it was the night of the falling stars, okay? So probably it was around half of July or half of August, 85. And we were watching the sky, and all of a sudden, one of these stars appeared, and instead of disappearing 1 second, it kept going, changed direction, and it went down slowly but surely, and after a little while, say 10 seconds of descent, it gets through the water. It gets into the water. And it,
wow.
the water surface was all light up, like a magic circus that it's lighting up, like, you know.
Was there a big splash?
No noise at all,
wow.
just very, very silent. But then, after a few seconds, 3 or 4 seconds, this globe, this sphere, came out again, and it was just skyrocketing, like an arrow in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
And this was followed by, we counted something like 15, 20 of them.
Wow.
I don't know what the heck they were doing
mm-hmm.
there, but if somebody had to tell me, Maurizio, now you wait 6, 7 years, and you see the Mexican wave starting officially, for me, it started 6 years before in Coba.
Mm-hmm.
And what was strange was the fact that after years, you discuss with your two friends, the other friend, I go like, you remember that night? One refuses the evidence. He says, mm-hmm. no, we didn't say anything, we didn't see anything at all. The other one goes like, yeah, we did see something, but I'm not sure what we've
yeah.
seen, you know. So even though we're the three of us, and we saw exactly the same manifestation that night,
mm-hmm.
so there's no chance that your interiority, your inside, is affected differently, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
that happens a lot. I've heard of a lot of couples where they've seen something, and one or the other says, my spouse says, you know, blows it off or doesn't want to talk about it, or, you know, or other groups of friends. It seems to be common that that sort of reaction happens.
I don't know why it is. It goes like this, but I felt the same when I started talking to abductees in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying by hundreds, but by dozens for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see in their eyes when they're approaching you, say, for instance, it's a couple, maybe the guy has the experience and is wife doesn't, but they are both shocked because he's so powerful. It is something that really hits you inside that is immediately transferred to the other person. And that other person has to cope with a new reality. And I have to say that only John Mack understood that. In that moment when we started studying the phenomenon, only John Mack was very, I mean, oriented towards, I believe, the right direction. Regardless to the admiration that I still have for Hopkins, for Yvonne Smith, for David Jacobs, but John Mack was just...
I feel the same. Yeah, John Mack and Leo Sprinkle, but yeah. John Mack especially is my favorite. And he, for those who don't know, he's a PhD, a psychologist out of Harvard who looked into this stuff and worked with Bud Hopkins for a while and did... You've got to read his books because they're incredible regarding this field. And he was still interested in the subject when he passed away just a few years ago.
Oh, yeah, and it was shifting to that point that we are calling the paradigm shift, such as it's not an experience that affects you only as a human being, but also as a human that has the power to open his mind and body to other experiences, to other levels of... and other dimensions. And I believe that also Hynek, Joseph Allen Hynek, in the last part of his life, he told many times Paolo Harris and also Anne Heller, and Anne was for about 10 years his assistant, that that scientist with that type of mentality was definitely shifting to another level of consciousness. Probably what affects you more with the UFO phenomenon is the question of contact.
Mm-hmm.
If you are not touched by this problem, you remain a stupid ufologist, such as a very useful idiot. You know, and this is not my definition of a ufologist, but it came from Kenneth Corso, Philip Corso. And I was offended in a way when he told me that, you know. But actually I found out that he's real.
Well, and essentially what it, and Colonel Corso, I know I've talked about him on the show, he was a colonel, and we'll get more into his details, but what was it he said?
That ufologies were for the American Army and the people, I mean, the military compartments that were studying the phenomenon in terms of administrating the reality of this phenomenon through their own power, us, as ufologists, we were considered useful idiots because we were fighting each other all the time. We were just giving the ground, giving them the ground of taking the advantage over the normal people. And if normal people, as ufologists, don't fight together, meaning unified in a way, obviously they don't go anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Now, one more question before we get into Santilli. Why do you think this is so important? Why do you feel it's so important to get this information out to people?
It is important because we are dependent from a government that actually 2 days ago demonstrated its real face. And I believe that what is happening all over the world, it included Great Britain, the disclosure program, it's only a... something that it's just a smokescreen. The official disclosure program will never take place with a voice coming from a government saying, oh, well, you know, we do have alien contacts. We did have alien contacts since long time, and we have hidden this information to you, and we infringed the Fifth Amendment or whatever. Our constitutional rights, obviously, are totally not considered by these guys. But the problem is that there is a question that it's fundamental for me. The phenomenon, the UFO phenomenon, is in the hands of the intelligence. Intelligence, not meaning the extraterrestrial intelligence, but I'm talking about the secret services all over the world, starting from the Mossad in Israel, passing through the Vatican, going through directly the various structures in Russia, in China, in Great Britain and in the United States. And this is a real problem because we will never solve this problem. Absolutely. There is no chance. They are too powerful. They have the right to also control, and we're giving them the right to control also the information, the mainstream information. We are giving them all the powers to keep going. In the 1960s, if you were there, you will see they weren't really, I mean, the real powers were really scared. And that's why they were keeping going with the Vietnam War and with heroin and with the marketing of heroin and the other drugs. So we were just definitely, how do you say, beheaded. We were just totally annihilated by ourselves. Unfortunately, that was the case for many friends that I lost. And that's too bad. I don't want to even talk about that. But it's the same situation that we do have with ufology right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, then let's move into, because that's where the stage we are in your life with the Santilli footage. Of course, it's controversial. And if there are listeners who have been, you know, following the story and want to ask Mauricio some questions, then go to openminds.tv to the radio tab, and you'll be able to put some questions in the chat there that we can ask him, because I know there were some people who wanted to come and ask some questions. But how did you get involved with this whole mess?
Oh, because we receive an ANSA, which is UPI originally, an ANSA dispatch one day. I believe it was late February, or even early March 1985, I received that, and it was saying that somebody in Great Britain was in possession of an alien autopsy film. And before that, there were rumors that Steven Spielberg got his hands on the same material.
Interesting.
Yeah, this came just 2 months before.
And those rumors were never founded then? Or,
well,
do you know if they talked to him? I had never heard that.
Well, this story is quite complicated, and it's just the beginning of the real mess, because I have reason to think that Spielberg was the first that was contacted in order to divulge some materials. And instead of doing it, as he was doing already with the movies, with Chichen, probably in his mind, something passed through, such as, do I have to ruin my career and my name going, you know, with real documents? So probably backed off. Ray Santilli, instead, was an entrepreneur, and he was very, very smart. Actually, he's half Italian and half English, all right? And his family comes from the center of Italy. And when we first met, through our common friend, Philip Mantle, who has to be considered the best researcher ever for the autopsy footage ordeal, we met in Cannes and in front of at the Martinez Hotel. And that afternoon, he paid for the meal. Actually, he was very polite. And he goes like, Maurizio, you're going to be stuck in a situation which I can call the shroud of Turing of ufology, such as you're not going to solve this problem ever.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, why? Because, he said, you will never have the elements to decide for good if this material is authentic, is for real, is genuine, or is a fake. And that was a something like he was cursing all the UFO people because in three months, it was terrible. What happened was really terrible, but also the first official screening in London, May 5th, 1995. We were 200 people there, and I looked at the other people around me, and they were literally terrified by what they were seeing, because the impression of that autopsy is so powerful, is so poignant, that you cannot avoid to ask yourself, is that for real? If that's for real, are we humans? So this is the major topic of the Santilli footage. It's not the fact that it's good or no good. It's the fact that we had to confront ourselves then to the reality that in case, just in case, it was for real, such as the Americans got their hands on alien bodies, 1947 in Roswell, or after other accidents, if that's for real, they were, I mean, these creatures were treated like that, open up like, you know. So, from a conscious standpoint, I believe that the effect was positive. From the point of view of a regular mainstream ufologist, obviously was too much altogether.
That makes sense, because it's unfortunate that it seems that, and you would agree that at least part of it's a hoax, if not all of it.
Yeah.
But you're right, it does open people's mind to, and for especially for people like us, ufologists, most, if not every, the vast majority of ufologists, believe that a scenario like that happened.
Yeah.
Maybe that wasn't a filming of it, but it most likely happened.
Yeah, so we are not justifying at all Ray Santilli if he was the masterminder of a scam such as producing and filming and then distributing this false material, this hoaxed materials. We're not justifying him at all. But it made for the majority of people, if I consider that probably in the United States, approximately when Kiviat broadcasted the program, Alien Autopsy Fact or Fiction, I believe that around 40 million viewers, you know, only in the United States, watched those images. You imagine what type of effect could, you know, it will be driving a force that it's gigantic, all together towards one point. Is that a real creature? Yeah, could be like that. And we, as humans, we are in possession of these aliens. So the entire castle of lies, of governmental lies all over, it's dismantled in 1 second.
Now, you have seen what everybody else saw, but you saw a lot of footage that the public didn't get to see.
Yeah, because I was invited by Ray Santilli, and on April 25th, I was in London, and I had the chance to screen with the other fellow that was invited. His name is Reg Presley, and he's the former singer of a very, very famous band called The Trucks. We were there, and after a beautiful lunch with Ray Santilli.
What were some of the songs they did real quick?
Wild Thing with a Girl Like You and many others. I mean, that hit the charts.
Because my generation might not know the name of the band, but we know the song.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's easy. You Google The Trucks, and you're going to see the nice face of Mr. Reg Presley singing for them, with them. Actually, Reg was a very good friend of Ray, so I was quite disappointed that instead of being myself alone in that studio, in that office, he was such a great personality and a rock star. I had to say, okay, let's see it together. And we saw the 11 minutes of the first autopsy that nobody else has seen, with the exception of Colin Andrews, Philip Mantle, and his wife, Susan. And I believe that's it. I don't know if George Wingfield, the other British guy, ever saw it. But that operation is totally different. Now, the point that they are raising, Mark Lee Center is raising, and he's justified in saying that in our discussion in the Open Minds improvised forum that's coming out of this discussion, is the fact that we don't have to justify at all Santilli in perpetrating the doubt that maybe some material there is for real and that he restored some frames. You know what I mean? He had some good frames.
So the claim is that he had some real stuff that maybe what you saw in that he recreated, because they were in such bad condition, he recreated the what he saw.
Well, that is the point that Santilli made in the year 2006 when...
After he got busted.
No, not really. He never got busted.
Well, because what people had seen, now, it was portrayed as real at the time.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's not now.
Well, who came with the revelation that he restored the material, and actually that was almost an entire fake? Was Santilli himself.
Right, right.
In England, in a program called Iman Investigates.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just...
After he had already passed it off as real, though, right?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, I'm talking about 2006, 11 years later.
Mm-hmm.
He's coming out and he's saying, people, we did have some frames where legit materials, you know, but unfortunately, the original print were too damaged, and no way that we can transfer it on video. So we decided to rebuild everything from scratch. We hired a crew, and we filmed that we reconstruct the entire scenario, the entire scenes, including we do have the second autopsy that everybody saw, the debris footage, which is four minutes and a half.
And the debris footage is just footage of pieces of the craft, is that what
exactly?
Okay.
Fragments of the craft, supposedly. That footage is quite interesting. I don't buy that. It's a fake. But in any case, it depicts a situation where you have two large tables over which all these materials are there, and it's in the under a tent. And, you know, the entire story is too complicated, but we do have a major problem. Santilli can be a real liar, and the other problem is he never gave anybody original film with the creature.
Mm-hmm.
So it is irrelevant if we in Italy and shall in the United States...
Because you can't test it.
Yeah, it's a test that's useless. Even the statement by Kodak were useless. Even though they were saying that the material could be 1967 or 47, with no images of the creature on it, it's irrelevant.
Mm-hmm.
And the other problem is the question that the old man, the camera operator, the cinema operator, was never reachable, all right? And probably if it was ever a real living person, he died many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that Philip Mantle had a chat with this guy on the phone. But now Philip Mantle is absolutely adamant that the entire story is an hoax, because he met this guy whose name is Spyros Melaris.
Mm-hmm.
He's a TV producer and he's a magician, special effects editor, something like that. And Spyros Melaris is pretending to be the real deal. In other words, if the man that was hired by Santilli to do the entire shooting on location and edit and finding the actors and producing and post-producing the entire two segments of the first autopsy, three segments, first autopsy, second autopsy, and debris film.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know.
So, and for people, we have clips, and you said this is pretty rare, these pieces of the first film that you saw that no one else has saw.
Yeah.
We've got some still photos of those on the website, on your second story, that people can go see on our front page of our website right now. And you believe that perhaps, because the clips from that film definitely are different
from
the second.
I tell you what I think. I met Ray Santilli many times, and he's very smart. I met Volker Spielberg, that guy that supposedly is the German producer who backed financially Mr. Santilli in order to acquire the material, such as $100,000 in order to go come to the United States and meet the old man and purchase the materials and so forth and so on. And I tell you what, these guys all together do represent a trust. A very, very smart people who either got in a business bigger than them, therefore they had to conceal the second part of the material, which is the first autopsy, or they created everything from scratch in order to make a lot of money. And I tell you how much Santilli did. We sold, because I was part of the negotiations, and I can say that, we sold the Italian rights for 200 million lira at that time, which approximately right now is $200,000, which is the same amount that Kvyat paid, I believe.
Yeah.
And that's major.
So he's made a lot of money.
I think he made
200 million lira. I was freaked out for a second there. I know you're going to say that's like $1 million, but...
I have reason to believe that Santilli made approximately between $5 and $10 million.
How did he make the rest?
Selling the rights everywhere in the world.
Wow.
Well, he was flying all over the world. He was a busy guy.
Yeah.
Absolutely. With the, this story is the biggest ever. Either you call it hoax or legit, it's the biggest media story ever for me.
There's a question here in the chat. And he asked, did Massimo Signoracci see the video?
Yeah, he saw the video, absolutely. We, I had Massimo Signoracci and...
And maybe you should explain who he was also.
And the Signoracci family were embalmers for more than 100 years in Rome. It's type of... it was a family tradition. All the male members of this family were becoming... either anatomopathologist, which is, you know, the way that you describe the situation. I mean, they technically, it's forensic medicine. So you have dead bodies, and the first part is analyze the body. Second part is dissecting the body. Third part is autopsy the body. Mm-hmm. Fourth part is embalming, in case the body of that, it's very famous.
Right.
So they embalmed three popes.
Like the TV show Six Feet Under.
Yeah, exactly. Prince Farouk of Egypt and many other big names. And Signoracci, at that point, the two guys, Cesare and his nephew, Massimo, were the first technicians that I wanted, I mean, real experts that I wanted to see the video.
Mm-hmm.
So when Santilli brought me the video in a beta tape, I met these guys and they were adamant. They told me, there's no way that this is a dummy. There's no way that this is a human deformed body. There is no way that these guys are performing incorrect procedures.
Is this the first?
They ever released autopsy, which is the second one.
Oh, so that was the second one they saw.
Yeah, the second one, absolutely. No, the first one stays, I don't know where Santilli has it. maybe we as investigators, we're supposed to go to London, but that would be useless. That would be useless. There's no reason for it. In any case...
It might be fun to dress in some ninja outfits and...
Yeah, and go there and sneaking around at night.
Yeah.
Yeah, well... I tell you what, the Italian, the other guy that I interviewed was Pierluigi Baima Bollone. He's considered the maximum authority in Italy, top authority in the forensic.
In everything?
Forensic.
No,
forensic.
I was going to say why.
University of Torino. That guy performed 40,000 autopsies in his life.
Yeesh.
Well, off the records, he told me and my then friend Roberto Pinotti, he told us, I believe this is an alien. Then, when we were in front of a camera for 5 million viewers that night, he said, this for me is a biological nonsense, which is a nice way to say, I don't know what the heck is that creature, but it's biological, which is not a dummy, so it's not artificially made. And it's quite interesting because today, instead, we have these guys saying that they made it. So either we were all stupid or there's something real fishy.
What? And then you went and watched Massimo perform a couple
I had to.
Just to do some research yourself.
Yeah, I had to.
Yeek.
It was tough, but in a way also shows you the wonder of the human body. You have to see a human body inside, not only outside, to understand how it works and why we are so fragile in nature and why life is giving you a great, it's a real gift, you know. When you see a dead body and they open it up, it's something that will stay in your mind and your heart for the rest of your life.
I can imagine.
I needed to see that because I wanted to make a comparison with the black and white pictures of the alien in the autopsy footage.
Yeah. Well, I guess I want to move away from this because
we've got
some other stuff. But did you want to talk to some of the things Mark Center had said?
Mark Center is posing questions which are very legit, and I like to keep going with him in the discussion. One point is clear to me. We need this guy, Spiros Melaris, to come publicly out with the physical evidence to each one of us, not only to Philip Mantle. I need to see these materials. I need to see the shots on location, the original materials. I would like to see also the dummies or the creatures that they built, even though I know that they were just destroyed, they got rid of them, you know. Mm-hmm. So we don't have them. I don't know if they do have right now the physical evidence.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, Santilli is in slight advantage over Spiros Melaris.
Oh, and then I guess you did. There is a movie about this whole ordeal that's not very well known.
No.
But it's pretty interesting.
It is interesting. The last 18 seconds.
What's the movie called?
It's called Alien Autopsy.
Mm-hmm.
And it was released
comedy,
in 2000. Yeah, it's a comedy done in Great Britain.
Kind of reminds me of The Men Who Stare at Goats because it's taken these actual events and kind of putting a comedy fun type of...
It's a way to tell you the truth, partial truth, and giving you some pictures... not corresponding to reality details.
Mm-hmm. Not like Fourth Kind, which is completely false.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah. Well, maybe another time.
Yeah.
All right. Well, what was the question?
The movie?
The movie came out, and those last 18 seconds when the actors impersonating Santilli and his friend and partner, Gary Schofield, are watching this 18 seconds, for me, those 18 seconds, if they were really, really created by QWERTY Films, which is a British film company, they deserve an Oscar for special effects.
And they're claiming to have made it, right?
They didn't claim it officially. They just said on the phone, somebody on the phone said to Philip Mantle, yeah, we did it.
Mm.
Now, show me the evidence for this, please, because each one of us can go rent the movie, because it's everywhere, or just Google it, and you're going to see the last 18 seconds.
Mm-hmm. I got to admit, those last 18 seconds are good, and they had me curious for a while, but it's a tough case, and of course, that's why it's so debated and course, it will continue to be.
Wendell Stevens, Colonel Wendell Stevens, was with us last week.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted to go a little, we wanted to have his idea about it, and we showed him the 18 seconds, and he said that all the uniforms and even the behavior of the people that are there, such as lots of militaries with different uniforms pertaining to different weapons, such as Marines or other. Or Navy were consistent.
Mm-hmm.
So in 1947, if anything happened like that in Roswell or nearby, could really happen like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So eventually, moving on, you got to write for the magazine and everything. You had your Area 51 magazine, which is, I got to see that, and it was great, looked great. I've talked about it on the show before. But and you got to meet Colonel Corso.
Yeah.
So, and you got some insight with Corso that others hadn't, because you got to spend a lot of personal time with him. So explain a little bit who he was and what his ties to Italy were.
Yeah.
And some of the time he spent with them.
I believe that originally his family came from Sicily, like mine, And what happened was that Corso in 1943 served in Italy, but from 43 to 46. But he was the head of the Allies forces for the intelligence. Mm-hmm. So he was the so-called liaison officer. He was in a very delicate situation, a position. And he was managing the counterintelligence activities in order to protect the American troops and the British troops, basically the American troops, in Rome, basically. Mm-hmm. And why they chosen him to be in that position? Because he had that type of very tough mentality. He was trained by the Britons, and he was good in Italian. And from 1946 to 1996-97, when he first came to Italy, I mean, it's a long time, and everything happened, and Corso was serving the United States flag for his entire life.
Mm-hmm.
So when we first heard that this Italo-American colonel was going to publish a book called The Day After Roswell, I said to Paula Harris, my correspondent then, you go to Roswell, you meet this guy, please. It's very important that you have a chat with him. And Paula was very lucky.
Mm-hmm.
She met him, you know. And Corso goes like, are you Italian? And then they get together, you know, and from that moment on, everything like a real adventure. Corso was never so keen to give interviews here in America, you know. Instead, he was so open to the Italians that he did with me 5, 6, 7 TV shows. I don't know how many numerous radio interviews. And how many interviews, regular interviews to newspapers. The point is this, Corso was credible because he was for real, not a no-no. You know, he was a tough cookie. You know, they were still bringing a stiletto right here under his jacket sleeve. You know what is a stiletto?
It's a little knife?
Little. It's about 10 centimeters of a knife in terms of
mm-hmm.
the cutting part of it, you know. Very narrow, and he used to use that to kill people.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. He defended himself from a Gestapo aggressor.
Did he ever threaten your life?
Not mine, but I have to discuss a lot with that guy.
Well, sometimes you get in heated conversations, and maybe I felt like pulling a stiletto on you once. But...
Well, I tell you what. Corso was never... very cocky. He was mm-hmm. always very serious.
Yeah.
But what can I tell you? I think it was credible, and I think that mainly his statements regarding the fact that from 61 to 63 at the Pentagon, under the orders of General Trudeau, he had to deal with the so-called Roswell material, that was for real. Absolutely,
mm-hmm.
absolutely. There's no way that Corso was a liar. Corso mm-hmm. was not a liar.
He worked for a couple presidents. I mean, he did work at the Pentagon.
Yeah.
To imagine this guy was in charge of nuclear missiles at some point, if I understand.
Yeah, in what sense?
So, I mean, to imagine that someone like him would lie. But you guys got some insight that others don't. For instance, in Italy, you were able to print his personal memoirs or his personal notes.
Yes, exactly. He gave me his diary called Dawn of a New Age, and we translated it 5 years after his death. We did have to do that because the book that came out in 1997 actually is an Hollywood rendition of the original log that Corso used to keep transfer himself when he decided to become public for many good reasons, and he was approached approach Simon and Schuster. Actually, they decided that the book has to be rewritten, and they gave it to Bill Burns, and he's a good journalist, and actually he did a great deal of a job in transforming the book, totally. So Corso was telling me many times that he didn't recognize his work in that official officially released book. But in Dawn of a New Age, instead, you have his real memoirs, totally different.
What were some of the insights in his memoirs that aren't in the book?
The way they were treating the subject was very cool and cold in the same time. They were dealing with the presence, the alien presence, in terms of intelligence activity. Corso used to say many times, just in case, they are hostile, we're supposed to be prepared. So in that book, you can see how much he was careful about the right approach that an intelligent officer had to have towards the alien presence. So he was keeping records of sightings all over the world, and he was making comparison with the activity that we had in the United States compared to the Russian intelligence knowledge of the phenomenon, comparing the data and coming to the conclusion that they had to be considered enemies. So is the that type of attitude. Of course, it was never in Roswell.
Which makes sense, and it's kind of like the problem if military is the one overseeing this whole issue, because they're, like he says, their issue is security, so he has to be prepared to defend ourselves against these guys should that be necessary.
Absolutely. I remember I was very insisting in one question with Corso. I wanted to know if possible future wars against aliens, the eventual danger of an alien threat from outer space will be considered by the Americans or the Russian. How can we deal with that? And Corso was saying to me that basically he thought that SDI was, you know, just another smokescreen, and that the real wars with the aliens would be played on a different level, which is viruses. He was convinced,
making people sick or something.
Yeah, I mean, destroying entire populations through the dissemination of viruses. Probably it is just the opposite of what we can see in that movie War of the Worlds. When they, I mean, the assailants, the Martians, are destroyed and are killed by one of our bacteria, you know? Corso's mentality was just the typical patriot and a soldier. So he kept his diary in that sense. And the final point is, yes, we have many whistleblowers, okay? But Corso was not a whistleblower. Corso was the real deal. There would be no other field of Corso, I'm pretty sure.
No? Well, yeah, he's definitely the highest ranking person who's come forward with inside knowledge like this.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he said that he did it for his grandchildren.
Yeah, a good reason for that, you know, because new generation, now we're facing the upsurging of the new moment, which is a cultural moment, and it's not political, which is called exopolitics. And Corso was, in a way, also a precursor, because he was telling me, he was telling everybody that we, from the scientific point of view, after we understood, the Americans understood, there was no way that we can make their machines working through our brain waves. Our wavelength is totally different. We are not capable to drive their machines with a, the mental strength that we have.
Because they use their brains and our brains just don't.
Exactly. Die. They were trying that. You know, Corso said that they were trying to have pilots working on their machines. There was no chance. I mean, I'm talking about recovering the region of flying disc, and this is the so-called retroing back engineering. Okay, no way. So Corso said, we need a new science. What the heck was he meaning with a new science? I still don't know. But maybe it's not even quantum physics. Maybe we need somebody that will start with one different position. I am a scientist. You are an alien.
Mm-hmm.
Admit that aliens are among us and talk to these aliens, like in the movie The Day Earth Stood Still,
mm-hmm.
when you have the scientists and they are the only ones capable to communicate in the right sense with mm-hmm. with Klaatu, you know, the alien.
Yep.
Well, probably the scientists, the scientist community have the knowledge, but they don't have the power to come openly and disclose that they are already looking mm-hmm. and they are already studying technology, and from a scientific standpoint, they're studying their findings. They're
mm-hmm.
they're going after what they what we recovered on Earth.
Yeah, so they certainly know more than we do, and
sure,
maybe they don't have the power to share it.
No, they don't,
right.
Because otherwise they lose their chairs.
Yeah,
yeah, that's common all over the world.
They'll have to come work for us.
Yeah,
yeah.
But they have to talk, not keep still going with their mouth shut.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, before you know, we had a question in here, and I know they wanted to ask if you've ever been in space or done any research on the moon, like physically there.
Meaning that I was abducted?
Have you ever been in space? No, just been in space.
No, I'm not an astronaut, not even a cosmonaut.
Because I think, oh, there's some evidence
to
the contrary.
These are the real cosmonauts.
There's a picture here for those listening of Maurizio and Antonio, who was on last week, our coworkers,
mm-hmm.
and they're wearing spacesuits, and they seem to be ready for a journey. How do you explain this piece of evidence?
It is a piece of evidence that comes from fantasy, pure fantasy. But you know why? Also because those uniforms and helmets are from the Soviets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you were working for the Russians.
Well, that's just in disguise.
Well, cool. You know, they our resident geniuses behind the glass wall here wanted to share their excellent work there.
Mm-hmm.
So there's only a couple minutes. Now you're with Open Minds. You've got your story on Scintilli. Pretty soon you'll be writing some more on Corso.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And then... we have a magazine ready to go, and we're just getting the details
of
how we're going to release
issue
that.
Issue number one is ready to go,
mm-hmm.
and I hope that very soon we will be able to rumble and as never has done before. I'm pretty
mm-hmm.
sure this magazine collects the best brain waves in this field all over the world.
And a great big story on Van Daniken.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Who helped get you involved.
Yeah.
And his, something I have never heard of, is personal experiences.
Oh, yeah. He had an Indian friend for quite a long time in Switzerland. Mm-hmm. And this story is released for the first time in the United States, and I have to thank our collaborator in Germany, Robert Fleischer.
Yep.
Yep.
Well, great. Thank you for being on the show. This show, yesterday's show, it's great to be able to highlight my coworkers here because they're amazing guys and they've done some incredible stuff in the field. And you'll see more of them because I'll have them in once in a while talking about stuff, sharing their opinions on maybe current happenings and maybe movie reviews because we've been doing some movies together. So we'll be sharing all of that information with our listeners and our visitors to our website. Thank you for all of you who joined us in the chat and shared there. Thank you for the woman in the chat who said, my new facial hair looks dashing.
Good.
And next week we're going to have Nancy Talbot, and this is great because she has this incredible case of this kid in Holland who can supposedly heal and take pictures of UFOs and stuff. You guys know I'm a big fan of Nancy Talbot and her rigorous scientific work. If she says that this is real, she's got some evidence to back it, and she's going to share that with us next week and crop circles from the summer. So thank you all for joining, and we will talk to you next week.
Ciao a tutti dall'Arizona, da Maurizio Baiada, Open Minds Radio.
Da Milici Barada.
I appreciate the bad.